Hey, everybody, this episode is brought to you by my friends at ExpressVPN, expressvpn.com/Charlie. Secure your device, anonymize your online activity, protect your action online. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. Help our show out by also helping yourself protect yourself. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. My speech at a pro-life group, the Open Arms Pregnancy Clinic, right outside of Los Angeles, California, a great organization. Enjoy this speech. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Look, we all complain about the woke industrial complex, the woke Marxists that are running our schools, that are running media, and yes, also running our banks. You see, look, the real estate market, it's red hot. Tyler, he just sold his home, and he said, Charlie, I've never seen the market so unbelievable. So maybe you want to go buy a home. Maybe they're taking advantage of low interest rates. With all the economic uncertainty underway, people need to invest in real stuff. So here's a rule of thumb. We here are a solution-based show. So if you don't like the woke nonsense, stop using the woke banks. It's that simple. No more Wells Fargo. No more JP Morgan. No more Goldman Sachs. No more big bank culture. Instead, I have these two great friends, and they do a great job. It's Andrew and Todd. Andrew Del Rey and Todd Avakian. They love the Lord. They are Christians. They are honest. They are straight shooters. And they are on a mission to make sure that you guys can refinance, but be told the truth. Look, when I took out mortgages for the properties that I have, it was one of the worst experiences I've ever been through. Yeah, some of the people were very nice, but I could tell you the bank itself was just so bureaucratic and hard to work with. My producer, Andrew, is working right now with Andrew and Todd to fight against the woke banking culture. And he tells me that they're part counselors, part financial counselors, planners, and they're really helping him. So here's the thing. Andrew and Todd are mortgage bankers. They're not brokers. That means Andrew and Todd and their team can take care of your loan personally from start to finish. You'll likely actually talk to Andrew and Todd yourself. So right now, maybe you're walking or you're like, I want to refinance the home, or maybe I'm under the process. Stop it. No more Wells Fargo. They're funding $1 billion to BLM Incorporated. Drives me nuts. Bank of America shut off a U.S. Senate candidate who's running in Senate in Delaware, just shut off their bank account. Instead, let's support the good guys. I know a lot of you right now say, Charlie, I want to support the good guys. Let's do it together, okay? So here's how you do it. Go to andrewandtodd.com. That's pretty easy to remember, right? Andrew, Todd, andrewandtodd.com, or call 888-888-1172. That's 888-888-1172, and say, hey, I want to talk to Andrew and Todd. Charlie Kirk told me to call. In fact, I just had this unbelievable meeting with them. We talked theology. We talked the church. They're conservative. They're unbelievable. And all you have to do is call them up. Just go to andrewandtodd.com, call 888-888-1172. That's 888-888-1172 and say, Andrew or Todd, I would like to speak to you. Charlie Kirk sent me. And I'm telling you, you'll probably get them on the phone unless they're traveling or handling some crisis. They take a lot of the phone calls themselves. Great people. andrewandtodd.com. No more woke banks. Let's work together to crush the back of woke Wall Street and support the good guys. andrewandtodd.com. Thank you. Great to be here tonight, and quite an honor. I do speak a lot across the country, and we get a lot of people that kind of want us to travel, and I always try to do pregnancy crisis centers. I think they're so important. I think they do such incredible, unique work, and quite honestly, from a purely selfish standpoint, I just love coming to these because I just feel better about life, and just I'm like, this is like the most beautiful thing I've seen in the last year. Is that not like all these people that are so happy to have children? And we need more of that in our country and less of whatever they're putting on television. So thank you for that. That actually lifted me up. And so I just want to reiterate this. This is a wonderful organization. And I am going to, at the end of this, ask for you to support this organization because the fight for life is the most important fight that we're involved in. And I'm going to talk about the work that I do on high school and college campuses where a lot of this kind of intersects. But I just want to reiterate, the entire team here at Open Arms Pregnancy Crisis Center is so important because the whole team, they're dedicating themselves to this. And you see the budget of this center. A lot of the people that work for these centers, they very well could go work for a different hospital institution, but they make a choice to go work in an arena that literally saves lives at the moment where it's needed. So I just want to give a round of applause for the team of Open Arms Pregnancy. That's so important. And Debbie, you're doing a wonderful job. So, and I really mean that. It's a very difficult job to do, especially under all these circumstances. So we were supposed to do this in May, and I want to thank all of you for rescheduling. Now, I had a very good excuse. In my defense, would you agree? Was that a good excuse? So I try not to pull rank, but you know, I contacted Debbie. I said, look, I'm getting married in early May. Is there any way that we could reschedule this? And you guys were so understanding. So thank you for that. And my wife is actually, she just came in. So Erica, please stand up. And we've been married 6 weeks now. So and so thank you for allowing us to reschedule this and for obviously important reasons. There was one event that we actually had to move. I was telling the story at dinner. They were like, is there any way you could come a couple days after? I said, look, I'm not going to be like overly a jerk here. I'm not speaking at your event. I'm getting married. I'm going on a honeymoon. I'll pay you. Okay, how about this? I'll pay you not to come speak, and we got it figured out. You guys were so wonderful and full of grace, so thank you. I never had to do that before where I was just kind of like, I'm drawing the line here. I think marriage is probably a good line to draw for that. And so what is life? That's an important question. Life is a gift. It's given to us by the theme of this dinner tonight from our Creator. We are made in His image. And we talk a lot about the need to protect life, but we also have to talk about a culture of life. And tonight, I think it's really important for us to understand that all of us here, when we protect life and we talk about the need to fight for those that can't fight for themselves, is we're really trying to articulate that there is a transcendent order. That if you do not believe that these beautiful children that you've seen are worthy of protection, then you're really engaging in a theological debate without ever actually admitting it. And this is what happens on our college campuses and our high schools every single day. We are in the midst of a theological debate right now in our country. And the theological debate is very simple. I don't mean eschatology versus Arminianist. I'm not getting into any of that. Here's what I mean. All of us here tonight generally believe in two things. That there is a God and you are not Him. That's a general agreement. Can I get a round of applause for that, everyone? That's generally what we believe here, right? Now, This is, if I say this on a college campus, it's largely considered heresy. The first one was like, who are you to say that there's a creator? And I have fun with atheists a lot. I think that we have to have more fun generally. I think that we have great ideas, but we have to be less mean and angry. I need to take my own advice sometimes, by the way. Let me just be very clear. You know, there's no such thing. Everyone knows that sometimes you have to take sometimes the advice you give, including to your children and people around you. And so I have fun with atheists, and I start with, and people come up to me, and by the way, atheism is a religion. I think we have to be more clear about this. Not every Christian agrees with me when I say this, but they have a code of beliefs. They try to proselytize non-believers. They are fervent about their belief in nothingness, and they organize themselves all the time to try to get people to their side. And so one of the first things I always try to say to people that have committed their life to believe in nothing is that, well, without God, there would be no atheists. And that one just like really like, what are you talking about? No. And no, of course there's nothing. And therefore nothing came out of nothing. Like, okay, well, really, that's interesting. That one really bothers them, right? And so, and my favorite thing to talk about with atheists is really the motivation, right? Is the willingness to be open-minded. Is, do you hope you're wrong? That's the most important question you can ask someone who has decided to believe in nothing. Now, let me be very clear. There's a difference between agnostics and atheists, right? People that are agnostic, it comes from a Greek word, without knowledge or searching or trying to find the truth. I have a lot of respect and empathy for agnostics. I do. People that are trying to figure this whole thing out. An atheist is something completely different. An atheist is someone that is saying, I figured it all out at age 19 because I took intro to metaphysics and there's nothing. That's basically like, I got it all figured out because I go to UCLA and I'm the smartest person in the world. Like, okay, got it. Thank you. And so, and it's kind of interesting. We, again, there's no age limit on wisdom. I've met plenty of people that are very old without wisdom and plenty of young people that have wisdom. Wisdom is the knowledge of things that never change, right? So let's just make sure we define wisdom. Wisdom is the knowledge of things that are eternal. It is the knowledge in the divine. It is the knowledge in how human beings act. For example, a human life is worthy of protection 2,000 years ago. A human life is worthy of protection now. And a human life will be worthy of protection 2,000 years from now. That is an eternal truth. That does not change just because we have Twitter, right? It does not change just because we have airplanes. The idea of the mechanics of our society does not change our morality. College does not teach you this. College teaches you that we're in this postmodern moment. And because we've made all these advances in science, yeah, okay, we can talk about that. That's not what I'm here to talk about tonight. But, you know, it's John Stewart said it best. You know, thank goodness we had science to get us through the last year because science created all of this. It's very, it came from a laboratory. John Stewart said it. Probably one of the greatest bits of late night television I've seen in quite some time. But there's this idea in morals and ethics that we've progressed so much that the truths of the Bible no longer apply. That look at us, we have airplanes. Why do we read Proverbs anymore? It's true. No, that's basically part of what college morality teaches you, is that we have advanced so far as a species. And kind of our job, those of us that believe in eternal truths, the things that do not change, is kind of to slow down and say, hold on a second. We're just as broken and in need of a savior today as human beings were 1,500 years ago or 2,000 years ago. That human beings are just as desiring for power, just as treacherous, just as deceitful. And that's a really important argument to engage in. Because if you all of a sudden say that somehow modernity is making human beings so much better, now don't get me wrong, some of our circumstances have improved, of course. But that doesn't mean our human nature has improved. There's a difference between the framework, our laws, and our circumstances, and actually who we are. And so we were made in the image of God, and then there was a fall, a separation. Sin is the separation from God, and we have a tendency to keep on wanting to separate from God. And the story of the first 11 books of Genesis is kind of how do we reconcile with this? What do we try to do? Well, first, we, with incredible jealousy and with vengeful anger, we go and kill our brother. It's like that's pretty awful. We lie to our spouse and we try to create a structure in Genesis 11 to challenge God himself, the Tower of Babel. We know how God responds to that. So we see in the first 11 books of the Bible, kind of this sinful nature replicate itself in a variety of different ways. And then kind of after Genesis 11, the story of the Bible actually begins in the sense of like the history of the Bible. I'm not to say that Noah was not history, but where we actually have like Abraham and the lineage on down from there. And then the story replicates itself in the same similar way, which is God gives you a promise. They temporarily honor it. We think we're smarter, right? We think we're not God, or we think we are God. We think we can do whatever we want to do. And then we go into kind of this cycle of abandonment. God dishonors that. We go into chaos, and then we have to retreat back to God. That sounds like Tuesday, right? That sounds like every single day. And it's true. And then eventually God gave us this gift that we did not earn, we cannot pay for, that there's nothing that is this thing called irresistible grace, amazing grace, which is his son. And we have this through, and if there's any non-believers here tonight, thank you for coming, by the way. I mean that. No, there are some people that I was told that were here that have not yet found Christ. I'm really glad you're here because I want you to hear this truth. And if you ever find anything better than Jesus Christ, I'll give you my cell phone number, seriously. Because there is nothing better than Jesus Christ in this entire world. Please go find it. And we have four gospels written by four different people that never contradict themselves. With even the idea of archaeological texts, it is the most verifiable, reinforced from a purely historical standpoint, idea of what we can prove. There's never been archaeological discovery that has disproven a truth of the Bible. We believe that Socrates, Plato, and Aristotle wrote what they wrote, yet we have 1,000 times more archaeological and literature evidence to reinforce the truths of the Bible. There was a pool of Siloam. There was Herod's gate. You could go there, you could touch it, you could see it, you could walk through it. And yes, Jesus Christ was a real person who turned water into wine, who actually manifested himself to be amongst one of us, to be a human being, lived the perfect life, resisted the temptation of Satan, taught us how to live, literally rose the dead, and then was tried, accused, and accused, tried, and crucified for something he didn't do, died, and then rose again. And that was the fulfillment of something we don't deserve, which is eventually eternal life if you accept him into your life. Now, this is the truth that we all need to get out. And around that truth is then this idea of a call for us that are Christians to try to contest for that truth in every single arena. And that's why we're all here tonight. And so I'm always struck by the people, and I'm not to say that you can't be an atheist and also run a pregnancy crisis center. But I am struck that almost every single pregnancy crisis center is run by Christians. And I have a whole other shtick on like big families. I'm still looking for an atheist family with 8 children. If you know one, please find. No, seriously, it's like an open offer. I'm sure it's out there somewhere. Please, I want to find this family. Like every major family, like they're Mormon or they're Quaker, or like there's like whatever, they believe in a God. Haven't found the guy that's like, I don't believe in a God, let's go have 7 kids. I wonder why. The same is with pregnancy crisis centers. The law, the truth, I'm sure there's someone out there, but the truth remains firm, which is, why do this? This is hard work. This is really sacrificial work. Why would you do a pregnancy crisis center? And the answer to that question is because you've been given that grace, you've been born new, and now you feel so charged and reborn that you want to go give life to somebody else, even if it's in a little bit of a glimpse, because you've been given life by your creator. That's why you're here tonight. And that's why the center exists. It's because all of a sudden you were born new and you're like, I'm willing to do a pay cut. I'm willing to get there at 6 a.m. I'm willing to do the thankless work. I'm willing to get yelled at, whatever, all this stuff. Because if I could just save one life, I then can give back to what I've already been given. Who's your wireless provider? AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile. What if I told you PureTalk USA uses the exact same network as one of those carriers? Same tower, same exact coverage, but literally costs you half. I know it sounds crazy. When I first heard about PureTalk, I thought, this is too good to be true. Sarah from Abilene, Texas says, the service is amazing. Love the price. The speed is quick. The reception is perfect. Eugene from Granbury, Texas, good service. Haven't any problems in our travels. We move around the state pretty much. Since giving up AT&T, we really don't feel there's any difference in the quality. We're getting ready to put our service on our iPads as well. Switching is so easy. You can keep your phone. They'll just send you a SIM card so you can get the same great service you currently have at half the price. So why is it so much cheaper than AT&T, Verizon, or T-Mobile? Well, the average person is saving $400 a year. Listen to this. Unlimited talk, text, and 6 gigs of data is just $30 a month. So here's the deal. Unlimited talk, unlimited text, plus 2 gigs of data for just $20 a month. All you need to do is grab your phone and dial #250 and say Charlie Kirk. That's #250. Say keyword Charlie Kirk. And when you do, you'll save 50% off your first month. Keyword Charlie Kirk, #250. But this is really a question of morality and ethics. And so if there is no transcendent order, if you do not believe that there is something greater than you, then all of a sudden life and yes, abortion becomes a utilitarian debate. And this is a very important thing. So I speak on college campuses all across the country, right? I've spoken to over 160 college campuses. I'm the only conservative to speak at UC Berkeley, UCLA, Stanford in one semester and live to tell about it. I've been all across the country, right? I've been from Brown, I've been to Columbia, you name it, I've spoke there. Turning Point USA, we're on thousands of high school and college campuses. We have over 160 full-time staff. I'm hearing what your children are going into debt for, right? I hear what your grandchildren are borrowing hundreds of thousands of dollars for. And there is this zeal that exists on these campuses to try to make you into little evangelistic nihilists. It's like, we are going to make you to believe in nothing, and not just nothing. Like, you're going to enjoy it, and then you're going to become a revolutionary. And if not, you're a bad person. Shut up, racist. Like, what? Like, okay. You know, like, what if I believe in a creator? Like, then all of a sudden, you get into this struggle. And the baseline of all of this, which I think is very, very important, is this question of how important do you actually think you are? And this is something we have done an awful job of in our society. And this is why I think the self-esteem movement was one of the most harmful movements ever propagandized on my generation. We should have a self-control movement, not a self-esteem movement. Let me tell you very much. We need a self-control movement like right now. But it makes sense, though. If you want to turn people into little Neros and into like the 19-year-old equivalent of Caligula, then of course you're going to have them believe they're the most important thing ever. And so I never got the self-esteem movement thing until my friend Dennis Prager explained it to me. By the way, God bless Dennis Prager. Love that guy. And it was so I was in high school and It never made sense to me. There's massive posters, right? You're perfect the way you are. And I understand the intention, right? They were trying to stop bullying. They were trying to stop self-harm. It had the opposite impact, actually. It had the absolute opposite. You're perfect the way you are. Everything's great. And I remember asking my teacher once, because we had self-esteem like hour, like once a month, right? No, it's true. It's like, you're so perfect. You're so great. Like, look up to the skies and like whatever, like the stars, whatever. And so it's like some sort of strange pagan, like pseudo-religious ceremony. And I remember asking once, just sort of irritable, if I'm perfect the way I am, why am I in school? Right? Like, that's sort of an interesting question, right? And she was like, no, shut up, like, whatever. She didn't really think it, like, didn't really think it that through, right? It's like, no, I'm not really that interested in that. And that's actually really important, though, because what education should be is a challenge. What education should be is to tease, especially men. I want to just commend the man that runs the men's ministry. I heard a deep, bellowing voice. You're doing awesome work. Awesome. Because strong men are so important in this conversation. I'm going to get back to that in a second. And because a challenge is something that deep down every young man desires. And we've removed that, and instead we've created this entire young men and women, but men especially, really, really yearn for a challenge, and they desire pressure, and they desire to be pushed. We put the society where it's like, you're perfect the way you are unless you're a man, and then you must apologize it for your entire life. You must apologize for it in your entire life. And so, but it really struck me, like, how important do you actually think you are? Well, if education was actually working properly, you would think you're not very important. You're not very wise, but you want to do everything you possibly can to try to figure out about the God that put you here. And you are thankful that you even have breath in your lungs, and you desire to understand beauty at all costs. That's what education used to be. Education used to be teasing an 18-year-old. Welcome to college. You ask the 18-year-old, who's super smart, high IQ, think they know the whole world, what is beauty? What is goodness? What is truth? And they think that, come with us. We're going to find out together. That's the way education used to work. It used to work in college. It's like, we're going to break you down almost to the point where you can't take it anymore. And you're going to rise up with stronger metaphorical muscles, and you will have a stronger character because of it. Now college and education is the exact opposite. Now you walk in when you're 18 and they're like, there is no beauty. There is no goodness. There is no truth. There is no God. And I'm going to tell you the one thing you can do about it, which is become kind of like a pseudo revolutionary. And you're really important, even though there's nothing, because that's all you know. Right? When you think about it, when there is no God, what becomes the ultimate guiding principle? You, your consciousness. It's the obvious deduction when you don't believe there's anything above you. And then that explains exactly how we are able to morally justify a lot of the things that happen. Because then abortion and life becomes a utilitarian debate, which is like, no, what's best for me? I'm not ready. And I just want to say what this Pregnancy Crisis Center does is it solves the problem of what I consider to be the greatest criticism of the pro-life movement. And we talked about this on the phone, which is the pro-life movement has to do a much better job of having grace and compassion, healing and openness for women that are pregnant or have had abortions, and not make them the target of your virtue signaling or your condemnation. We are all sinners. If a woman had an abortion, they deserve grace that only Christ can provide. If you're looking for someone to exhaust your frustration, go after the abortionists or the professional abortion incorporated lobby, not the women that were lied to or propagandized in those clinics. I encourage you to do that. And so this is the real debate that's happening here. And I think that it's actually a debate that we are going to win. And so I want to encourage you that those of us that care about life, and we believe every single life is worthy and deserving of protection, I want you tonight to dismiss one thing that I know all of you have had come across your radar screen, and that is cynicism. Things can't change. The abortion lobby, they get pills on demand. We're going to do all we can, but I don't think we can think transformationally. I want to encourage you that we have to think bigger than ever. I want to encourage you that we can actually turn the corner on this big time. And I believe that the biggest issue, and you saw it in this video, the biggest issue was not the question of whether or not we have the truth. We know that. The question is whether or not can we get a pregnant mother to look at an ultrasound screen. That's a mechanical issue when you think about it. It's not like we need to find a better truth. We have the truth. The barrier is whether or not a mother is actually understanding the full facts and knowledge around that very specific decision. And so when we talk about this issue and actually building a culture of life and some of the arguments that are made, I'm going to tell you one thing that I think is a couple things that are super important. And we all know the statistics, and Seth Gruber here does an amazing job. He's a great friend of mine, one of the best pro-life speakers out there. And I always text him. He knows all the numbers so well. 8 weeks, a baby can feel pain. At 21 to 23 days, a heartbeat begins. And 6 weeks is when I think it becomes detectable in some ways on an ultrasound. And then you go through all the numbers. It's pretty amazing. But even beyond that, we ask ourselves the question, when does life begin? Or we ask somebody else. And we're winning on that. So I want to encourage you to continue to ask that question. That is a winning question. When does life begin? And it begins at conception. But that only wins if you're able to then win the moral argument. And let me prove it to you. There's a dialogue I had with a pro-abortion activist in Washington, D.C. That went very viral, had 20 million views. And I asked her, I said, and I didn't even know I was being filmed. Someone just came up to me. I was just super curious. It was really calm. It was really respectful. I said, when does life begin? She said, well, it begins at conception. I said, then how are you a pro-abortion activist? And I was introduced to their next argument, and get ready for this. Well, she said, well, no, we need population control, and like we have too many people and too many children, it's bad for the environment, and we don't need unwanted people. And so I'm making the moral argument not to have that person exist. So don't assume just because you can win people over that that's a human being, that that is actually going to be applicable in this kind of new morality that we live in. And so it all comes back to this idea of who are you and why are you here and in whose image are you made? And that really is a theological debate. It comes back to ultimate purpose. And that's what I love about the center is that it actually brings people to that type of ultimate purpose and salvation. Because if we look at this myopically, I don't think we're going to win. If we look at this broadly and transformationally, we know we have the truth. We see people's lives changed. And we also know, and this is a very, very important point, that when people are actually able to see the entire complexity of the argument, their life is never the same. Do you notice that we have nothing to hide as pro-lifers, and they are always hiding something? Do you notice that? That's how you know you're on the right side of the argument. You know you're on the right side of the argument, where you're like, I'll show you all my materials. I'll let you tour my facility, interview my staff, you know, audit my uncle. Like, what else do you need me to do, right? Whereas, like, the Planned Parenthood, it's like one-way glass. Like, you're not allowed within 50 feet. No, total anonymity. What's done in darkness will eventually come to light. And the deeds of darkness and that what that is done has to be done behind a protection of a one-way glass and the total anonymity. That's how you know what they're doing is not right. And so the question is, how do we shine more of a light on the goodness and the truth of all that? And here's the beginning, the two calls to action, which include supporting the center. We have to think way bigger as pro-lifers. We're thinking way too small. And what do I mean by that? We have to think of like, huh, how many of you remember when there was a culture of smoking in this country? Right? And we kind of like laugh at it. It's kind of stigmatized. We could do the same thing with abortion. We can have a culture of life where all of a sudden there's like, there's no smoking signs everywhere. And we do it with grace and compassion and mercy and love where people think it's unthinkable to actually have an abortion. That would be an amazing win. And how did that happen? Happened through mass media, private conversations, telling the truth, being unafraid to engage on the civic and the law side, which I'm going to get to in a second, because sometimes pro-lifers don't want to get involved in the laws of things. We have to wherever we possibly can. And that's an idea of something that actually changed. Seatbelt laws is another example. You might not like them. It was a change. People used to ride around on the back of pickup trucks. Is that a thing? Someone used to do that? Yeah, everyone's laughing. They're like, oh, yeah, I did that. It's perfectly safe. And we had a camel, too. It's like, hey, it's great. It's like, America used to be, I love this. It's so much fun. It's like, America used to be so free. I'm like, tell me why. And like, of course they're right, but the example is like, we used to ride around on the back of a pickup truck with a 12 gauge and a camel. I'm like, really? That's totally free. Yeah, it's terrific. Sounds fun. Now we're like wearing masks and we shower. Like, oh yeah. We're like, oh my gosh. Way too much in the other direction. So, the point, as I digress, the point is we could think big, everybody. Things can change. They could change for the worse. They can change for the better. That is determined on us. Are we going to vision cast? It says in Proverbs, without a vision, the people perish. So what's the vision? The vision for this center is to save more babies. I'm going to list out the numbers for this center. It's a really amazing thing. 866 clients served. That's a lot of people in this valley. 1,447 appointments kept. 539 pregnancy tests. 393 ultrasound exams. 230 male partner sessions. Awesome. I love hearing about that. That's so important. 664 gospel and faith conversations. 664 people heard the gospel. Face-to-face, 642 pregnancy parenting classes, and 429 baby closet visits. The annual budget, $660,000 a year. The $660,000 a year, that's like the white wine budget at Planned Parenthood every month. It is. And by the way, they drink white wine while they're doing some things that David Dalyden caught on camera. And please keep David Dalyden in your prayers, by the way. David Dalyden caught on camera the incredible criminal enterprise that existed in this state of the aborting of children, the selling of their baby parts for cash. Those videos have been wiped from the internet. Kamala Harris raided his apartment. He's been criminalized and somewhat forgotten in certain circles. I'm not going to forget David Dalyden. I'm going to use my platform to try to reinforce him and support him and pray for him. That man is a hero. And so that's one example of thinking big and doing what we need to do. And the last thing I'll say is this. Well, I kind of do a pastor's close, so it's like 45-minute close. So it's like the close, it's like the speech. So like, forgive me. So it's like we're kind of like going around. We're kind of doing like a big approach, right? Is that all of you have to be individual ambassadors for life. What do I mean by that? Is that we're only going to change things when you have the courage and the confidence and the clarity of thought to be willing not just to post a tweet, not just give money to this, but sit around the table with your relatives and your cousins and have that tough conversation. I'll give you one great example of a conversation starter. And it was from an 8-year-old at the March for Life. Anyone been at the March for Life before? It's one of the coolest things ever. I love it because it's the true definition of spontaneous order. It is the most disorganized thing I've ever been to in my entire life. Seriously. No one is in charge, yet everyone knows kind of what's happening. It's awesome. And it's like you have to like block off a whole week, right? You know what I'm talking about, right? It's like people come from out of the hills and the rivers and the valleys. And you're like, who's that person? It's like out of control, right? And so literally like 700,000 young people descend on Washington, D.C. for the March for Life every single year. And from every single denomination imaginable, all saying that we need to fight for life. And it's beautiful. And this one girl just is kind of on the side of the corner. And I just kind of like to look at little nuggets of wisdom. My wife and I call these God winks when the Lord speaks through kind of unusual vessels. And there was this 8-year-old that had this sign. And I saw every single sign imaginable, right? Like choose life and like all the kind of generic ones. But it was so obvious this 8-year-old made her sign herself because everything was misspelled. It was like backward S and like whatever, right? And it was, but I was like, this is amazing. And so I went up to her. I said, who made this sign? And she said, it just came to me one day in science class. And it said, if it's not your DNA, it's not your choice. I was like, that is the greatest, like, that is so wise. And really what it comes down to is, yes, who are you? If you come down to its fundamental level, to the mapping of the human genome, you are a bunch of deoxyribonucleic acid. And if it's not your deoxyribonucleic acid, it's not your choice. And I was like, that's so smart. And so I've obviously used it a lot since, and I didn't give attribution to the random 8-year-old that marched for life from 2 years ago. Whoever you are, I hope you become a U.S. senator or something because you're super smart. And that's why we must choose life. We're just barely touching the surface of the combined wisdom of this entire country and planet, by the way, because of how many, God forbid, people that we have unfortunately discarded. The point is that we need better arguments, and we need to be unafraid to be at the table to make those kind of arguments and ask questions in the pursuit of truth. So what I'm really saying is that this is no longer a spectator sport. And so when I ask you to support this center tonight, you need to do that generously. But then you have to say, hey, who in my life, in my circle, am I bringing to go see the pro-life cause correctly? Because I could tell you that's what they're doing on their side. They're doing everything they possibly can to do pamphlets and leaflets. They're well-funded by taxpayer dollars. They get $500 million a year of federal taxpayer dollars go for Planned Parenthood's overhead. That's just for their overhead budget. Not to mention the small dollar donations they get, the celebrity donations, the massive foundations. They got more money than they know what to do with. And then there's all the other different ones that they incorporate around that. And so that's the call to action for all of us. And so let's vision cast. In 20 years from now, when I'm 47, not 27, are we going to have a culture where we have less abortions and we have laws that reflect God's eternal truth? Or are we going to keep on doing the "we got us"? I don't like the "we got us." I started Turning Point USA because I got so tired of the "we got us." We got to do this. We got to reach young people. I don't like the "we got us." This center is not a "we got us" center. The center is "we are" center. And every single one of you are part of that. And this is I'm going to tell you the thing that bothers me the most that I hear. When people say, "Hey, Charlie, how's it going out there?" It's like, what am I, like a running back for the Los Angeles Rams or something? Like, what do you mean out there? Like, you know, kind of in the world of trying to change minds and fighting for what's right and good in the world. I say, wait, hold on. I didn't go to college. There's nothing special about what I do except that I decided to try to do it and I got really lucky and the Lord blessed me along the way and I have some incredible people that have tried to support me. Every single person can do this. Every single person. It is in a different variety of ways. It's not for everyone to go up and speak and do all this. But for some people, it might be, man, I feel really called to do 10% more in that area. Maybe it's becoming a sidewalk counselor, which I got a crash course in tonight. And I can't remember your name. Saved the life in the last 48 hours of a woman that was going to an abortion clinic in just the last 2 days. How amazing is that? That's being pro-life in the entire culture, right? And these things have momentum. And I have really good news to share. This is the most pro-life generation in American history. Every single number shows it. And when confronted with the facts, it all of a sudden goes down from like 40% pro-abortion to like 20% pro-abortion. It collapses. And so it's a matter of getting those ideas out there and getting that truth out there. And that's where all of you come in more ways than one. And so,
as you know, my friend Mike Lindell has a passion to help everyone get the best sleep of your life. He didn't stop by simply creating the best pillow. Mike created the new Giza Dream bed sheets. They look and feel great, which means an even better night's sleep for me, which is what's crucial for my busy schedule. Mike found the world's best cotton called Giza. It's ultra soft and breathable, but extremely durable. Mike's Giza sheets come with a 60-day money-back guarantee and a 10-year warranty. The first night you sleep on Giza sheets, you will never want to sleep on anything else. Giza Dream Sheets come in a variety of sizes and colors. Mike is making a special offer for my listeners. You'll receive 2 for the 1 low price plus free shipping. Go to MyPillow.com and click on the Radio Listener Square and use promo code Kirk. There you'll find not only this amazing offer, but also deep discounts on all MyPillow products, including the MyPillow mattress topper, MyPillow towel sets, and so much more. Call 1-800-875-0425. Use the promo code Kirk. Go to MyPillow.com and make sure you use the promo code KIRK.
I have a couple closing thoughts and remarks here. The first is I want to invite anyone here who has not accepted Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior to do so. I'm not going to do an altar call or raising of the hands. There's nothing more important than getting in contact and being born anew by a creator that loves you and you're made in his image. I'm going to tell you what grace is by first telling you what justice and mercy is. Justice is getting exactly what you deserve. You stole something and you go in front of a judge and the judge says, you stole something, you're going to jail for 5 years. Mercy is getting less of what you deserve. You go in front of a judge and they say, well, you stole something, you get 2 years of prison. Grace is something entirely different. It's something that it's hard for us human beings to even understand. You stole something, you go in front of a judge, and you're sentenced to 5 years in prison. And the moment you're about to serve that prison sentence, someone steps up and says, I'm going to serve that prison sentence for him. He can go free. That's grace. And that's what Jesus has done for every single person here. Something we did not deserve and we did not earn. So I encourage all of you that, if that resonates with you at all, I encourage you to open up the greatest, most powerful book ever to exist in the history of the world. One book and a common theme, a God that created us, we rebelled, he redeemed us, and we live forever in harmony with him. That's what the whole book is about. It's a lot more complex than that, but that's kind of the Spark Notes version of the most important book ever to exist in the history of the word. 66 books, there's only one author. It's all the Word of God. There's more wisdom in just one page of the Bible than every single college campus in this entire country combined. And so I'm going to end with 2 things. I promise, because I said I'd be done by 9. The first thing is when people say, Charlie, are we going to win? I get asked this question all the time. They say, Charlie, are we going to win? And I don't know if they're talking about politically, morally, culturally. And I know why people ask that question. They ask that question, some of them, because they want me to give them permission to give up.
because they want me to say, you know what, we're going to lose, which I don't believe. But let's say I said that. Then they'd be able to go home and say, hey, I just get to sit at home because I was told that we're not going to win. I am not a Caesar's Palace betting odd maker. I don't know if we're going to win or we're going to lose. Is the probability of victory a reason or not for us to go do the right thing? Absolutely not. That is never, ever, anywhere in the Bible or anywhere in biblical truth, are we supposed to weigh the odds of whether or not we think we should do something that is righteous and obedient. That is not what we're supposed to do. But let me tell you something about this beautiful nation that we live in, the greatest country ever to exist in the history of the world. We believe that our rights come from God, not from government, a republic of, by, and for the people, separation of powers, consent to the governed, independent judiciary, a constitutional republic that is enshrined based on biblical and eternal and divine truths. Let me tell you something about this country. This country has withstood the test of time and has been tried through a lot of things throughout our history. And there's something unique that is almost in the soul and the spirit of our nation. It's resilience, perseverance, grit, the ability to overcome the impossible, to shoot for the stars and sometimes actually land there on the moon, to build an interstate highway, win two world wars on two different fronts. And there's a story that I think embodies this better than any other. When you think things can't get any worse, and I know a lot of you have probably been watching television, you just close it, you're like, oh, I just can't take it anymore. I just feel like it is nothing but darkness and doom and gloom. Let me tell you a story about one of the darkest days in American history, a day that was, quote, that will always live in infamy. I'm talking about Pearl Harbor, when Japan preemptively striked us on a sunny day in Hawaii, and they sunk the entire Pacific Fleet. Thousands of American soldiers died in 30 minutes or less. We did not declare war on the Japanese. They declared war on us. We didn't know what we were going to do, and all of a sudden, we didn't have just one war. We had two wars on our hands, because if we're at war with Japan, that means we're also at war in the European theater. America was scrambling. We didn't know what to do, and Franklin Delano Roosevelt gives the speech. This is a day of living infamy, and Congress almost unanimously votes for a declaration of war in both theaters. America was solemn, somber, confused, and looking for direction. But there was one man that was smiling on December 6th. And that man was the greatest man to live in the 20th century, a person that we've deleted from our textbooks and from our history. It's Winston Churchill. Winston Churchill was the greatest man to live in the 20th century because he was built for that moment. They hated him before the war, and they hated him after the war. He wrote 50 books, and he understood the world better than anyone else. He called the Nazi scourge before it happened, while it happened, and during it, and was able to defeat it. But he was smiling that morning. Why was he smiling? He walked into his war cabinet, probably on 2 hours of sleep, with a little bit of whiskey and a little bit of a cigar, the way Winston Churchill always would. A smile a mile wide you'd think would be Christmas morning. And his war cabinet was distraught, almost crying. And they said, Prime Minister, have you lost your mind? Why are you smiling? And he's smiling. He says, ah. Takes a puff of his cigar. We have won the war. And his war cabinet, his war minister shuffles his papers, says, sir, with all due respect, what do you mean we have won the war? Currently, they just bombed the church in North London. The Royal Air Force is losing 300 people a day. We barely got our troops out of Dunkirk. The opposition is planning a ground invasion of any moment at Brighton. We can't even field an army, let alone staff a navy. Our air force is a laughingstock against the Luftwaffe. What do you mean we have won the war? Winston Churchill takes another puff of his cigar. He says, ah, I know the Americans. Once they awaken, it is over. We have won the war. And ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you, when we awaken and we contest for truth, the war is won. It is a matter of how bad we want it. It's in our spirit. If we wanted the retreat, we'd go to the French. If we wanted a day off, we'd go to Italy. If we wanted to sue for peace, we would go back to France. If we wanted to complain, we would go to the United Kingdom. If you want to win, you go to America. It's in our spirit. It's in our soul. It's who we are. We are going to win. God bless you guys. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us your questions, freedom@charliekirk.com. And if you want to get involved with Turning Point USA, go to tpusa.com. See you in Tampa, Florida, July 17, 18, 19, 20. tpusa.com/SAS. Thanks so much, everybody. God bless.